Beer, Cheese, and Murder is a true crime podcast about Wisconsin from Wisconsin. Due to the nature of true crime, this podcast contains explicit and graphic content which may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. I'm Erica, and joining me today we have
Bonnie,
Dina,
and Terry.
We are down a couple folks today, and about half of us are currently recovering from COVID. So, if anybody is curious, most of us, I think, if not all of us, are fully vaccinated, but that doesn't always save you. But it is good for the immune system. And I think also too, having the vaccination makes it hopefully easier for the recovery as well as the duration of it as well as what they say. So we are in the process of recovering. And so for today's episode, we want to make sure we kept it going and keep on track with our schedule and keep content coming out to our listeners, because we do appreciate that everybody is starting to tune in and want to, bring you some fun stories. Not always fun, but
we don't want you guys to miss us when we're gone.
Entertaining stories, I should say. As well as highlight new things while we can still within our state. So a little lighter topic for this week's episode, a little less work for myself as I myself am recovering from COVID, and with that did not have the motivation to do a whole lot. So we have some dairy themed crimes that we'll cover. So kind of like our Wisco crime beat, in the sense that we'll be doing a series of articles about various dairy crimes. But before we get into that, I would like to highlight what I am drinking, as I am finally up to drinking an alcoholic beverage after the last week. So I am drinking an apple cherry cider, the county tart, as they like to call it, and they being the Island Orchard Cider, which is out of Door County, Wisconsin. And it has 6.5% ABV. So it says Island Orchard Apple Cherry Cider starts with an apple base to give it body. The tannins from the cherry give it a pucker and clean vividness. And it's actually a very easy sipping, drinking beverage.
So real light.
It's going down. Just nice. It's nice. It's not too heavy. I mean, especially when you're coming off of being sick, you don't want anything too overpowering. So it's just a good way to unwind at the end of the day after being sick, working from home, and having a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old
kids
running around.
I don't even know how you could do it.
I don't either, honestly. It was hard enough me being on my own with my cat. Having to get the energy to get up and actually give her food took everything I had. She would just stand there and stare at me for like 10 minutes, and then she'd lay down next to me and wait. Very patient, thankfully, but man, yeah.
Well, I
took care of kids at the same time.
I'll even tell you, before they started showing symptoms, was wearing masks around the house too to try and keep them from getting exposed if I could help it. I mean, it was probably already too late, but during the days when I really couldn't breathe and then wearing a mask in the house on top of it, oh man, that's rough.
Yeah.
But luckily we're all getting through it and we're on the upswing, I think. So good news.
I got myself a hot toddy to help through the final symptoms here and get my sinuses all cleared up and get some hot liquids in me. And I used in my hot toddy a local honey from a company in Milwaukee called Honeybee Sage Wellness and Apothecary. And they are located at 91st and West Lisbon in Milwaukee. And they're open Tuesday to Saturday. They've got quite an extensive range of products, all sorts of stuff. So might want to check that out. It's honeybeesage.com is their website. And the honey is delicious. So I have that in my hot toddy today.
Yeah, I love local honey. Obviously, this time of year, it's even better for those of us with allergies, too.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else with a beverage today? All right. So then I'm also, actually, I've already devoured it, but I made myself a little like charcuterie. It's called a charcuterie board, but it's more of a charcuterie plate or bowl, but I just kind of had a selection of cheeses in the fridge. So I threw that together, especially since this is a dairy themed episode. So I had some Castello smoked Gouda, which is out of Holland Town, Wisconsin. And I got to tell you, that stuff is smooth. Very good. And then Lack's finest baby Swiss cheese. So that was good. And that's out of Greenleaf, Wisconsin. A little bit more pungent in flavor. And then the Stone Ridge cheese curds and snack bites, which actually I bought in Door County, but it's out of Coloma, Wisconsin. So luckily with this particular hit of COVID, I did not lose my taste or my sense of smell, or I would really be in misery. So thankfully I was able to enjoy all of that as I snacked it down while we were chatting it up before we started recording. So I think, Dina, did you have a snack for this episode too?
Yeah, I just have a couple of white chocolate covered pretzels that I got at the Door County Confectionery up in Door County that I'm snacked on a couple of those with my tea. Lost 6.5 pounds with COVID. So, you know, just eat a couple of pretzels and chocolate and a couple of snacks, and I'll probably put it right back on in about 2 days.
Honestly, I was thinking that it got me back to where I needed to be after all the snacking from Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
But I would say that white chocolate covered pretzels are my favorite of chocolate covered pretzels.
Same.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, something about that white chocolate. It's not for everybody, but I love it.
And I don't love white chocolate on a lot of other things, but on the chocolate covered pretzels, the white chocolate is the bomb.
There's something about that salty sweetness that mixes just perfect. So in addition to my cider, I do have some hot tea on standby, so I'm just gonna check in on how that's doing, because it also has some delicious honey in it, but that's more so if I feel like I'm gonna start coughing. I don't want to disrupt the podcast too much, so I'm gonna get that ready. But all right, so that's what we're drinking and eating. And then, as I mentioned, today's episode is a dairy themed episode. So I selected everything from here on out in accordance with that.
Thanks.
So our Wisco fact is dairy and cheese themed as well. So Wisconsin's oldest cheese shop is actually Baumgartner's in Monroe, Wisconsin.
Ooh.
It opened in 1931, and over the years, it has become a tourist destination. Merchandise there includes Wisconsin's finest cheeses, of course, as well as imported cheeses and specialty foods. And there is also a tavern attached, which has a reputation for the best cheese sandwiches. And they look like they're very much old style German cheese sandwiches with rye bread and a big hunk of cheese, and you can add like salami or corned beef and such to it as well. So
it sounds so funny when you have a place that specializes in something as simple as grilled cheese, but the places that do specialize in something as simple as grilled cheese honestly make them so phenomenally well that I don't know what they do to make them so good. But mm-hmm. you think, what else can you do to a grilled cheese sandwich? But we had a place in Milwaukee for a long time that had all these grilled cheeses as well. I don't remember what it was called, but I tried most of them on the menu, and they were, every single one of them was just phenomenal. And it never tastes like that at my house.
Right. There's actually, when we went to Disney World, they have, I forget what it's called. It's like, there's some special grilled cheese sandwich that they have, and we looked up the recipe and we tried to recreate it at home. It did not go well. So I gotta give credit to places that have that specialty, because they just, it's not just the recipe, it's whatever process that they use to put it together. It just works really well. And apparently this Baumgartner's, in addition to being the oldest cheese shop in Wisconsin, is in fact known for their specialty cheese sandwiches. So if we're ever in that area, we'll definitely have to check it out.
Yeah.
It's got a very old school German vibe going on with it. So that's our fact. And so then for the episode, again, dairy crimes. So I found 5 different articles about different cheese or dairy related crimes over the years. And so I'm just kind of going to do this in a an order of events, if you will, with the oldest story first, and then work my way towards current day. So we'll just jump into it. The first story that I was able to find was published in September 30th of 2009. It was written by Dan Flynn. And I found it on foodsafetynews.com. So the title is Wisconsin, Criminal Charges for Raw Milk Possible.
What?
Yep.
Okay.
Just as Florida's pet use scheme for selling raw milk appears to be coming apart, Wisconsin prosecutors are threatening to take away the old cow share gambit. 3 Wisconsin counties located immediately west and southwest of Milwaukee, Walworth, Waukesha, and Racine are experiencing an outbreak of Campylobacter jejuni. That's a...
Say that 5 times fast.
Yeah.
Like I should have...
Say it 1 time fast. Campylobacter.
Right. Most of the illnesses were tracked back to a Walworth County farm owned by Mark and Petra Zinneker, which uses a cow share program to skirt Wisconsin's prohibition against selling raw milk to the public. It's a crime.
I know what a cow share program is.
Right.
People at home couldn't see my face, but the people on the Zoom may have. I was like, cow share program.
Only in Wisconsin, folks. Let's see. It's a crime to sell raw milk, said Assistant District Attorney Zeke Wiedenfeld. Whether or not it gets charged is a determination we have to make. Farmers and their families can drink raw milk, but under Wisconsin law, they cannot sell it. So-called cow share programs sell shares in an animal and then pay for feed and water in exchange for raw milk.
So several people own one cow.
Sounds like it.
And they all kind of just split the cost of that cow and then split the product?
Sounds like it.
Pretty good idea.
That loophole does not really exist in Wisconsin law, state officials say. To qualify, one must be a real bona fide owner with a real financial stake in the farm, not just in an animal. Assistant DA Weidenfeld expects to take several weeks before making a decision about bringing charges. He said he wants to determine what is the proper outcome for a case like this. Wisconsin health officials have run tests showing the Campylobacter from 25 patients had a DNA fingerprint that matched feces from cows at the Zinnaker farm.
Ew.
All 35 sick people in the three counties say they drink raw milk. 30 admit they got it from Zinnaker farm. 21 are under age 18 and one was hospitalized.
So can I ask a dumb question because I'm not a farmer? What is raw milk? Does it mean non-pasteurized?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that. I think that's what it is.
Okay. I don't even like
from the cow.
Yeah, I don't even like store-bought milk, so I can't even imagine drinking that. But
we
grew up on a farm. I mean, it is.
When we'd go by Grandpa's family, and on the farms, that's what we'd drink. But it was.
It's the running theory as to why she is now allergic to dairy.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
But anyway. Okay. So Campylobacter is a bacteria infection that typically causes vomiting, cramping, and diarrhea. Lovely.
Not fun.
Yeah. Zinnaker's were again told they cannot sell raw milk, but authorities have not stopped them from shipping milk to a regular dairy for pasteurization, which they were so also doing. Criminal prosecution for selling raw milk would be a big step in a dairy state like Wisconsin. Just that possibility, however, is not making everybody happy. Wisconsin's investigation of the Campy outbreak was poorly conducted and yielded no substantial proof raw milk made people ill. The Weston A. Price Foundation President Sally Salen Morrell from the Elkhorn, Wisconsin Gazette. They found the same organism in the manure of some cows. They didn't find the pathogen in the milk, she said. They have a correlation, but correlation is not the same as causation.
Right.
It's a good bet, however, that the pro raw milk advocates at the Price Foundation are worried about the trend line. The possibility of Wisconsin bringing criminal action for raw milk sales under a cow share program follows developments in Florida that could drive raw milk further underground there as well. Today is the last day Whole Foods will be selling raw milk in Florida. For the past 6 years, the pricey grocery store chain has sold raw milk after labeling it for pet use only. Ooh. It is the only large grocery chain to do so. Also, a major farmers market is attempting to ban one of the state's 19 raw milk dairies that are licensed to make sales for pet use only.
Ooh. Underground milk sales.
Right.
This is what the world is coming to.
Other outbreaks in Wisconsin that have been tied to raw milk include in December 2001, at least 30 laboratory confirmed cases of Campylobacter jejuni were identified in northwestern Wisconsin, all tied to a cowshare program. In June 2006, 19 laboratory confirmed and 39 probable cases of Campylobacter jejuni infection were traced to cheese curds made from unpasteurized milk in an unlicensed facility by an unlicensed cheesemaker in Ashland.
Ooh, well, that's a crime.
Yeah. Nationwide, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report that 45 outbreaks tied to unpasteurized milk or cheese consumption occurred from 1998 to 2005. These outbreaks occurred in 22 states. Two were multi-state outbreaks, and they resulted in 1,000 illnesses, 104 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths. In an article published in the Wisconsin Medical Journal in August 2000, the Wisconsin Division of Public Health reported that from 1992 1999, consumption of raw milk and raw milk products was one of the top three risks for E. coli infection in Wisconsin.
And that doesn't really surprise me, I guess.
Yeah. And those can be fatal. Oh, all right. So now I know that cow share program is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Learned something new.
And yeah. People are still drinking raw milk. Didn't even think that.
Yeah. I mean, to each their own, right?
I mean, if you live on a farm, I guess it makes complete sense. I eat vegetables right out of my garden without washing them or anything. You know, I mean, it's my garden. I know what's going on with them. They know what's in the product. I know what I'm growing. Like, I haven't put any chemicals or anything on it to wash it off, but I'm sure there's bird crap that's been on my tomatoes that got washed off with rain and I didn't know it. And I just popped one of those bad boys right in my mouth. I mean, it is what it is. Haven't gotten sick yet.
All right. So we're ready for the next one. So this one was published February 24th of 2012. So I got this on raw milk. So this is rawmilkfreedomriders.wordpress.com.
Raw milk freedom riders.
Yeah. So a farmer faces possible 3-year prison term for feeding community. Farmer faces possible 3-year prison term for feeding community customers and other supporters stand with farmer. This is Baraboo, Wisconsin. Food sovereignty activists from around North America will meet at this tiny town on March 2nd to support Wisconsin dairy farmer Vernon Hirschberger and food sovereignty. Hirschberger, who has a court hearing that day, is charged with 4 criminal misdemeanors that could land him in prison for 3 years with fines over $10,000. The Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, DATCP, targeted Hirschberger for supplying a private buying club with fresh milk and other farm products. DATCP has charged Hirschberger with, among other things, operating a retail food establishment without a license. Hirschberger repeatedly denies this, citing that he provides foods only to paid members in a private buying club and is not subject to state food regulations. There is more at stake here than just a farmer and his few customers, says Hirschberger. This is about the fundamental right of farmers and consumers to engage in peaceful, private, mutually consenting agreements for food without additional oversight. At a pre-court rally scheduled for 11 at the, or it must be AM, in front of the Sauk County Courthouse in Baraboo, food rights activists will read and distribute a Declaration of Food Independence that asserts inherent rights in food choice. A signing ceremony will be part of the rally. The signers expect the declaration will inspire a growing food sovereignty movement. Speakers at the rally will include members of Hirschberger's club. Hirschberger and other farmers around the country have been and are facing state or federal charges against them for providing fresh foods to wanting customers. In recent months, the FDA has conducted several long undercover sting operations and raids against peaceful farmers and buying clubs that have resulted in farms shutting down and consumers without access to their food.
I mean, I guess there's good reason for all of this, because obviously everybody is supposed to obey food, at, you know, regulations, etc. But that does sound really funny.
But if it's not prepared food, if it's just
undercover sting
farmed food
and raids,
what's different than a farmer's market, right?
Yeah.
But they're unlicensed, and at a farmer's market, you probably have to have some kind of a license, I would assume.
For growing vegetables?
For selling them.
Yeah. Something.
Probably, yeah.
I think we've probably got bigger problems going on.
We could exactly. Then... into. Yeah.
Nowadays. All right. So next one. Now we're moving away from raw milk. Okay. This one was published on Valentine's Day on 2014. Yeah, it was written by Mary Ann Georgiantopoulos. Its title is this is on abcnews.go.com. It says, Wisconsin dairy workers charged with abusing cows.
Ooh.
Video shows the workers beating and dragging cows.
Come on now.
Oh.
They already have a rough life. Don't make it rougher.
Yeah.
Four workers at a Wisconsin dairy farm that is in the supply chain for DiGiorno's Pizza were charged with 11 counts of criminal animal cruelty. Following the release of an undercover video shot by animal rights group Mercy for Animals depicting brutal treatment of cows. The video shot last fall by an undercover investigator working for Mercy for Animals shows the farm workers beating, kicking, whipping, prodding, and dragging cows at Weiss, depending on how you pronounce it. Weiss would be the proper German way. Brothers Farm in Greenleaf, Wisconsin.
Damn.
The video, which was released in December, also shows the workers dragging the cows with heavy farm equipment, as well as cows with open wounds housed in unsanitary conditions.
Jesus.
According to the criminal complaint, Brown County, Wisconsin prosecutors charged three employees, Abelardo James, Lucia Martinez, and Mazel Manga Monero, each with three counts of intentionally mistreating animals, and another, Crescencio Pineda, with two counts of intentionally mistreating animals. Each count carries a maximum penalty of $10,000 fine and 9 months in prison.
Yeah, Greenleaf is like outside of Appleton.
Why would you mistreat a cow?
Seriously. Dragging it around with farm equipment?
Yeah, like kicking it?
Jeez.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, I'm glad that it was a criminal charge too.
Right.
So it goes on to say, we praise law enforcement for taking swift action and pursuing justice for these abused animals, Matt Rice, Director of Investigations at Mercy for Animals, told ABC News. In a civilized society, it is our responsibility to take care of all animals, including ones on a dairy farm. Rice said Mercy for Animals immediately contacted local authorities following the investigation and turned over the video, as well as statements from animal rights activists and veterinarians, including that of Dr. Temple Grandin. DiGiorno cuts its ties with the supplier last December, or cut its ties. And Hannah Cohn, a spokesperson for Nestle, which owns DiGiorno, told ABC News today that the company has added a new layer of audits that reaches further down its supply chain following the release of the video.
So do we know how there's no information probably about this farm? Otherwise you would have read it already, but I'm wondering if, you know, these are just three random employees or if they are part owners or, you know, because if they are just bad employees that were doing this and then the owner of the farm didn't know and then loses a huge account like that, it's just like that's tough as well. But yep. I think DiGiorno obviously is doing the right thing,
right? But then that means the owner wasn't monitoring.
True. Yeah, you're right, right. Actually, so yeah, there's
level of guilt there.
Yeah, because it's not like it happened one time and they missed right. it. So yeah, you're right, good point.
Especially if you have animals that have like open wounds and they're doing
right. How could you know?
It's suspicious of something going on. So
yeah. It just seems systemic. In January, we launched a new strenuous audit program in the U.S. that targets our direct suppliers, as well as others who do business with or provide ingredients to our direct suppliers. This includes third-party in-person audits of our U.S. dairy supply. All companies in our supply chain will be measured against our Nestle Supplier Code and Responsible Sourcing Guidelines, which outline our standards for animal welfare. At the time of the investigation, Vise Brothers Farms outside of Green Bay was supplying milk to the farming collective Foremost Farms, which in turn supplied cheese to DiGiorno, the largest frozen pizza manufacturer, which is owned by Nestle.
And I did not know that DiGiorno was the largest frozen pizza manufacturer. Mm. Kind of surprised by that, actually.
Or that it was owned by Nestle. I didn't know that.
I knew it was owned by Nestle, but I guess it's nationwide.
Hmm. Nestle
learned something else new today. Look at that. You're teaching me all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And this is old news, too. Nestle believes that animal cruelty is never acceptable, and we recognize our responsibility to do what it takes to eliminate it from our supply chain, Nestle said in a statement. We will not do business with companies that do not adhere to our strict standards, and we are always looking for ways to do better. In a statement, Foremost Farms USA, which previously said the company is no longer receiving milk from Vise Brothers Farms, said the company does not tolerate animal abuse of any kind. We believe that any individual who witnesses inappropriate animal treatment is responsible for making every effort to stop that mistreatment immediately. Anyone who mistreats animals must be reported immediately and should be punished in accordance with the law, the statement reads.
Absolutely.
After the video was released, Vise Brothers Farm said in an email that the company was not aware of the abuse and was shocked and saddened to see a few of our employees not following our farm's policies for proper animal care.
Well, there you go. That goes directly back to Terry's point that they should have.
Mm-hmm. They should have noticed.
Yeah.
Rice said Mercy for Animals wants to raise awareness of rampant cruelty against farm animals through the site sliceofcruelty.com. No socially responsible company should support farms that abuse animals, Rice said. And there's a link to the investigative unit homepage if you're so inclined. I'll include all the links to these articles in the online when I publish the episode. But yeah. Oh my gosh. I haven't watched a video. There's a still here.
I don't think I could.
Yeah,
it looks like there's a cow suspended. I don't even.
Yeah,
yuck.
What is wrong with people?
Right.
Oh, well, this next one is actually more on the comedic side, I suppose. So now. Good. Let's see a date here. This one was published April 21st of 2017. And I found it on, care11.com.
Wait, you don't have to flip through a bunch of pieces of paper to determine.
And hold them up so that we can see what you're looking at.
Like Jill.
I just have to scroll.
You don't print it all out on paper and read like Jill does? Come on. Jill's old school. Everybody else just opens up several tabs.
Right.
Exactly. That's exactly what I did.
He's 10 years younger than me. So come on.
Right. Yeah, we're old though. Yeah. Jill and I are old. But I don't have a printer, so I can't print anything. So I write it down or leave it on the computer.
All right. So the title of this one is Brazen Cheese Heists Have Wisconsin Authorities Baffled. Where did the cheese go? Where did the semi-trailer wind up? Just who was the cheese bandit? A year later, detectives in Wisconsin still don't know. Appleton.
Oh, the cheese.
Yeah. Appleton.
Semi-trailer cheese.
Yeah.
Big Mouse.
All right. So Appleton, Wisconsin. For one hard luck semi-trailer driver, the routine task of hauling 20,000 pounds of fresh Wisconsin cheese led to a mysterious crime that remains unsolved a year later. That night, the semi-trailer pulled into a storage facility near Interstate 94. The Oak Creek, Wisconsin business seemed a safe place to temporarily leave his trailer while he got his truck serviced. The property had video surveillance and a chain link fence. The truck had been traveling from Green Bay to the Milwaukee area. But by 2 a.m., when the driver returned, his trailer was gone. Someone made off with $46,000 worth of stolen cheese.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Where did the cheese go? Where did the semi-trailer wind up? Just who was the cheese bandit? A year later, detectives in Wisconsin still don't know. The Oak Creek case from June 30th was one of three cheese heists last year. Strange, unusual crimes that gave Wisconsin plenty of national notoriety. A semi-trailer filled with 41,000 pounds of Parmesan cheese was stolen in Marshfield, and another trailer of assorted cheeses was taken in Germantown. That pair of crimes occurred in January 2016, about a week apart. Both of those loads were recovered. The Marshfield shipment of cheese turned up about 2 weeks later at a storage warehouse near Appleton, about 105 miles southeast. The trailer of cheese from Germantown turned up at a grocery store lot in Milwaukee, about 25 miles southeast.
Wow.
It's an organized type of crime, said Marshfield Police Lieutenant Darren Larson. It's certainly very plausible because of the sophisticated nature of these crimes that you need knowledge of the freight shipping business.
Sure. You got to figure out where to take it, how to get it there.
And you have to own the equipment to get a trailer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can't just tow it with a car.
Nope.
Why would someone steal a truck stocked with thousands of pounds of yellow cheddar? Police and industry experts say it's all about resale value. The cheese from Marshfield had an estimated retail value of $90,000. Wow. The cheese taken from Germantown was worth $70,000, while the cheese stolen in Oak Creek was worth $46,000. But keep in mind, these are blocks of cheese, not bags of money being hauled out of your local bank. Even in Wisconsin, you can't exactly go door to door with this stuff. Unless your plan is...
You probably could in Wisconsin, actually. Right? Look at this big wheel of cheese I got here, people. Start the
You
bit.
Get a wheel, and you get a wheel, and you get a wheel.
You get a wheel, and you get a wheel.
So does that mean that we've got a cheese Robin Hood? I'm just
kidding. Robin Hood.
The harder part is figuring out what to do with it, agreed John Umhofer, executive director of the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association. It's such a name for a person who's the director of the Cheese Association. One of the transportation industry's leading experts on cargo crimes said most thieves have already lined up a buyer before they steal a 53-foot semi-trailer stocked with food or other merchandise. Food products are a bigger target than most people think. Food gets stolen all the time, said J.J. Coughlin, author of the 2012 book Cargo Crime, Security and Theft Prevention. You are dealing with people who are organized and true criminals, Coughlin said last week. It's not mafia like you think, but it's very organized. It can be a ring or it can be one person, but it's usually a ring of two or three people. Someone stealing a truck of cheese usually intends to sell off the product to a small mom and pop grocer or restaurant, Coughlin said. He recalled a crime he investigated years ago in Texas involving a stolen meat truck. It was a back alley deal. The thieves sold off the stolen meat for a flat $10,000 to a man who owns a chain of seven restaurants. The person buying meat off the street, he's just looking for the best deal, Coughlin said. However, now more than ever, it's increasingly difficult for black market smugglers to unload thousands of pounds of fresh cheese because the food regulatory industry has become wiser. Coughlin said it's inconceivable that a grocery store chain would buy a truck of cheese from someone pulling into their loading dock offering a discount deal.
Right.
Packaged cheese is barcoded with a traceable trail to track the history of the food processing origin, Umhofer said. That means it's practically impossible to sell a truck of stolen cheese to a reputable grocery chain. Fortunately for Wisconsin, the state is not regarded as a hotspot for cargo thefts, Coughlin said. Most cargo thieves operate in the South, where there are more mom-and-pop restaurants, convenience stores, and grocers. Smaller stores that aren't part of a national or regional retail chain often smuggle to remain profitable. As such, there's a greater temptation for some of these little businesses to buy stolen merchandise by the bulk at a deep discount.
The thing is, buying that way, I mean, how do they know if it's meat and cheese that it's been refrigerated properly, or like how long it's been in the semi versus, you know, I mean, they're taking a huge risk still.
Although large volume cheese heists are rare, they have happened before in Wisconsin. In 2011, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported on four thieves who were charged with stealing quite a few semi-trailers over several months. The stolen merchandise ranged from Nike sneakers to a tractor trailer filled with mozzarella cheese. It's now been 10 months since Wisconsin's last great cheese truck heist in Oak Creek. That crime and the two earlier cheese heists from January 2016 have netted no arrests. There were leads available, and we followed up on a possible suspect, said Marshfield Police's Larson. Unfortunately, it did not turn out. Right now, we don't have a specific suspect in mind. Even though the cheese was recovered by police from the two crimes in January 2016, the damage was done. I believe that was all destroyed, Larson said. They could not verify that any of the stolen cheese was properly stored. That's really unfortunate.
This is really making me want some cheese.
I happen to have a semi of it out back. You want me to go and get some? Wheel of cheese, anyone?
Whether the three Wisconsin crimes were carried out by three different perpetrators, it's hard to say, Coughlin said. Food gets stolen all the time, he said. They're probably not going to get caught if they have not been busted by now. The best hope for police in Wisconsin is that their cheese bandits were part of an elaborate ring. People talk, Coughlin said. The more people involved, the more of an opportunity for information slipping out.
Yeah, people can't keep their mouths shut long term.
Nope.
Everybody's got to babble.
All right. I got one more dairy / cheese related story for everybody. Hopefully I can make it through. All right. So this one was published July 10th of 2020. And this is on the Wisconsin Department of Justice website. As cheese factory owner pleads guilty to and sentenced to felony theft for stealing more than $20,000 from 83 farmers. Says Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Attorney General Josh Call today announced that Michael J. Moran, owner of Wisconsin Dairy State Cheese Company, pleaded guilty to felony theft from more than 80 farmers in Wood County and was sentenced to 1 year of probation, 100 hours of community service, and nearly $10,000 in fines and other costs. On January 28, 2020, Moran was charged with one count of felony theft. I'm proud of the work Wisconsin Department of Justice did to get justice for these hardworking Wisconsinites, said Attorney General Call. This case has ensured that 83 farmers got the money they were owed and hopefully will deter future theft from Wisconsin dairy farmers. Moran prepaid restitution in the amount of $21,250.97, which the state agrees is the correct amount. This money has been paid to the clerk of courts, which will distribute the restitution to the victims. Moran understands there are surcharges related to the restitution. The Wisconsin Department of Justice, Office of Crime Victim Services, and will provide the clerk with assistance as needed with regard to the victims and ensuring all victims receive their payment. The state and Moran jointly recommend to the court a sentence including a $5,000 fine, plus all applicable fees, costs, and surcharges at a minimum totaling $9,442.65. The court also added 1 year of probation and 100 hours of community service. Farmers provide milk to Moran's business, Dairy State Cheese Company, in Rudolph, Wisconsin. The complaint alleged that Moran forged the names of farmers on underpayment checks and converted the funds for his own use or the use of others. Processors such as cheese plants write underpayment checks to producers such as dairy farmers when the U.S. Department of Agriculture sets the price of milk higher than what a processor initially paid for the milk. USDA auditors determine the amount of underpayment and order processors to issue the underpayment checks. The complaint claimed that after the defendant would forge the payee's signatures on the back of the checks, he would then place them in the cash register at the cheese store, thereby converting them for his own use, all without the consent of the payees. The wow. checks from the, yeah, yeah. The checks from the register would then be taken together to the bank at the end of the week and deposited. Approximately 83 milk producers are reported to have been victimized. The total losses for these 83 milk producers amounts to $21,250.97. Of the victims, 21 are over 60 years old.
Man, jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This case was prosecuted by the Department of Justice Division of Legal Services, Criminal Litigation Unit Assistant Attorney General Dan Lennington. The investigation was led by the DOJ Division of Criminal Investigation with assistance from the USDA Office of Inspector General, OCVS Assisted Victims. A criminal complaint is attached with the link that I will include online when I publish this.
And he got busted during COVID
mm-hmm.
when everything was still basically shut down in July of 2020.
Well, and that's when farmers especially needed
money. Need the money.
I mean,
Wonder how long, terrible. Over what period of time. He probably was taking smaller amounts at a time and not thinking that anybody's going to notice. Over time, it adds up to $21,000. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. But those are a select few. There are more. And I think historically, as well as current times, in terms of dairy or cheese crimes in Wisconsin, it's what happens when you're in the America's Dairyland.
Yep.
There are going to be dairy crimes. But that is what I had for a little taste of some Wisconsin crimes with a little cheese flair. And in keeping with the dairy cheese theme, I'm going to move into our high note. So it was actually a recommendation of one of our listeners to try and highlight festivals in Wisconsin for the summer. Do you know? Nice. Give a shout out.
A shout out to Julie Rohr.
So, with that in mind, and with a little dairy flair, Wisconsin, as America's Dairyland, naturally has a big time love and celebration of cheese, including a number of cheese related festivals. Some of those festivals coming up in the month of July, which is when this episode will be released. So I did specifically look at a subset of those festivals, include the following. So there is Colby Cheese Days in Colby, Wisconsin, And that runs from Friday, July 15th through Sunday, July 17th.
I didn't even know we had a Colby, Wisconsin. That's kind of cute.
Yeah. There's another Colby Cheese Days car show. That is during that time period on July 16th, also in Colby, Wisconsin. And then we have Cheese Curd Festival that runs from July 24th through July 25th in Ellsworth, Wisconsin.
Hey, I had a trial up in Ellsworth once. It's outside of River Falls. Yeah.
Feel like a cheese curd festival would be lots of fun to check out.
There's not much in Ellsworth, so there's probably a very popular festival because it's a pretty small town, not much to do up there. Like one judge courthouse up there, small little area.
And the last one to highlight. The
population was 3,284 at the 2010 census. 2010 was a while ago, but I can't imagine it growing.
Yeah, right. Not much more than that anyway. The last one, which I'm torn. Half of it sounds great. Half of it is leaving me a little bit unsure if I would be interested in it or not, but it's on July 30th and it's the Bacon, Beer and Cheese Honky Tonk Festival.
Dude, I'm all in on that bad boy. Where is this happening?
I'm good with the bacon, beer and cheese. You lost me at honky tonk.
I'm all in on a honky tonk. Go find me a cowboy.
But that is in Lafayette, Wisconsin. I think I said that, but
putting on my calendar.
And obviously there are more. I specifically looked at July to kind of narrow it down, but because this is Wisconsin and we love our cheese, there are many, 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 many more. All I did was a Google search. So if anybody is interested in checking to see if there are any cheese related festivals or events in your area,
that comes right up when you search for it.
Yeah. Yep. So this is Wisconsin. But that is what I had for today's episode. Trying to keep it a little bit lighter, a little bit easier, a little bit Wisconsin themed.
A little bit shorter for your poor voice.
For my cough. But
you did good though. You made it through pretty well considering.
Yeah. But we have.
I hope everybody didn't hear a bunch of noise in the background. My cat kept playing with a crinkly toy, and she was jumping up and down on it, and so I kept muting myself. But I hope they can't hear that in the background. So she was going crazy playing with it, and it was just like it's like crinkly. So hopefully there's none of that in the background.
Yeah. No, there's plenty of I hear lots of background noise with Sean with the kids and trying to get them to bed. So hopefully nobody heard that. And
no, I think they've got such good filters on.
Yeah.
That last festival is only $20.
Ooh.
Dan Lepian, a Nashville recording artist that hails from Sauk City, Wisconsin, will be headlining the first annual Bacon, Beer, and Cheese Honky Tonk Festival.
First annual! I gotta go. How far is Lafayette?
Honky Tonk Festival will feature local bands. Bacon, Beer, and Cheese Festival also features great eats, local farmers, cheesemakers, clubs, and businesses will serve up signature tasty bites and sandwiches. This is making me really hungry.
It's about 2 hours.
Oh, it's outside Chippewa Falls.
Yeah. So now I want cheese and all kinds of stuff.
I want bacon and a cowboy. I mean, beer's good too.
Annual.
I'll let you guys know if I go.
If you do go, you're gonna have to bring us back some bacon, beer, and cheese.
Seriously, Oh, you know what? I can't. I got a 40th birthday party that day.
No cowboy coming on for you.
Man. You can't take the birthday party on the road.
Right?
Be like, I've got a great plan.
You guys, believe me. Just trust me. It'll be fun.
Oh, man. No,
anybody ever followed me when I said trust me has probably actually had a really good time.
Oh, man. But yeah, so, well, thank you all if you're listening for listening and sticking with us and going on this journey with us as we work to bring you more and more content, trying to keep up with the schedule, keep on top of it. We have more more plans in the pipeline, more things ready to release, and also stories that are ready to be told. So just stay tuned.
And keep those ideas coming, because people are reaching out and letting us know if the things that they like and the things that they want. And if you have stories that you want featured or anything, pass that information along to Erica, or pass it along to any of us, and we'll pass it along to Erica if you don't send it directly.
But yeah, I mean, when we are down and out dealing with things like COVID and we don't have much motivation, any assistance is welcome.
Right. Here's a case to work on.
But yeah, no, we just love hearing from you all and from getting your feedback on things that we should do or things that we are doing. So definitely favorite us, star us, like us, and whichever app you're using to listen to the podcast, follow us on Instagram at Beer, Cheese, and Murder Pod. You know, like the pictures, add comments to the posts, things like that. That's another great way to reach out and contact us. We're even sending messages on Instagram, also works. And then we also are on Beer, Cheese, and Murder Podcast.com, which is where all the references and links are posted. So just keep listening, just keep hanging in there. Stick with us. We'll have more coming for you. But until next time, eat, drink, and be wary. Thank you for listening to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. We would like to also thank the references that make this podcast possible. A full list of references can be found on our website at beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at beercheeseandmurderpod, where pictures from today's episode are available for your viewing. If you would like to share your feedback, Wisco facts, case suggestions, stories, or just whatever, please email us at contact@beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Don't forget to tell your friends, but most importantly, until next time, eat, drink, and be wary.